Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWIT, This Week in Tech, episode 60 for July 2nd, 2006. So, joining us for a special Independence Day edition, a last-minute cast cobbled together from the dregs of my Skype contact list, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, it's a pretty good one. To my left, John C. Dvorak /blog.org, or something like that.
That's a little dyslexic, but it's close enough.
It won't work if you enter it in.
Type Dvorak blog into Google.
And there you'll get it. Also from the Slam Dance Industries, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Patrick Norton. Don't call him Pat.
Don't call me Dreg either.
He's no Dreg. And David Prager, who is also, I guess, you know, everybody else is on vacation for the 4th of July, but hey, this is a quorum. This counts as a panel of twits. David's working hard on Revision 3's podcasts and vodcasts system, and do you work on Dignation as well? I guess that's really part of your job too, isn't it?
All of them. There's some changes going on, which I've probably said before, but everyone's been focusing on Dig 3.0 for the longest time.
Yeah.
So now that it's out of the chutes, we're going to shift focus over a little bit more. We're going to update the website and start putting forth some more consistent, different kinds of content.
Yes. So John was playing for us, and you might want to play a little bit of this. Ted Stevens, who is from Alaska, although I was confused earlier. Is he the chairman of the telecommunications committee?
Indeed.
And the guy who is spearheading the new telecommunications bill this week, the Senate voted. Well, actually, they didn't vote to eliminate the net neutrality provisions. They just didn't vote to include it. It was a tie vote.
Yeah, 11-11.
Committee couldn't agree, so it needs to be a majority to put it in. So the net neutrality provision is gone. And we have, I think, this fascinating explanation of net neutrality from Senator Stevens.
What the senator is talking about is allowing all of these entities that support this to provide streaming stuff going on the internet. Now, the internet, you know, let's go back. Internet started with a concept of local-to-local connections across the country, and you could go for Air Alaska, but you had to go through local connections to get there. Industry wisely provided for streaming for, in effect, a new kind of long distance, and that's what we've got. We've got a service that's immune to distance, and it's there for the consumer. But when we take indicate that anyone that wants to use this system for massive commercial purposes, well, there's one company now. You can get sign up and you can get a movie delivered to your house daily by subscription by delivery service. Okay, and currently it comes to your house. It put in a mailbox when you get home, annually or monthly, you change your order. But you pay for that, right? This service is now going to go through the internet, and what you do is you just go to a place on the internet, and you order your movie, and guess what? You can order 10 of them, and it's delivered to you, and this delivery charge is free, right? 10 movies streaming across that internet. And what happens to your own personal internet? I just the other day got internet was sent by my staff at 10 o'clock in the morning on Friday. I got it yesterday. Why? Because it got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the internet commercially. And here we have this one situation where enormous entities want to use the internet for their purpose to save money for doing what they're doing now. They use FedEx. They use the delivery services. They use the mail. They deliver in other ways, but they want to deliver vast amounts of information over the internet. And again, the internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. And if you don't understand, those tubes can be filled. And if they're filled, when you put your message in, it gets in line. It's going to be delayed by anyone that puts into that tube enormous amounts of material.
This reminds me of that old April Fool's gag I did some years ago where I said these guys were trying to pass a law saying you can't be drunk when you're using a modem. Drunk driving on the information superhighway.
You know, I could actually see these guys doing it. And now, look, Stevens is one of the three oldest senators. He obviously didn't grow up with the internet. He didn't even grow old with the internet. I mean, the internet is...
He doesn't use the internet, yeah, period.
He doesn't even use it. So,
and he's the guy who was trying to sneak the broadcast flag into the,
yes,
neutrality bill.
Exactly.
He's a weenie.
Exactly. On Wednesday, let's see, the broadcast flag did make it through committee. So net neutrality did not get through, but the broadcast flag did get through. Oh, what a wonderful day.
Because the broadcast flag is incredibly well-funded, and net neutrality apparently isn't.
I have to say, I shouldn't say this, but I'm still kind of conflicted over net neutrality. I don't like to see any government regulation of the internet one way or the other.
This is government regulation that says there's no regulation.
Is it necessary? It's something we have to do.
I think it happens in our country. It is. I don't think it is in any other country in the world, even China. Yeah. Although, you know, they're going to be doing their own thing.
Ironically, but, you know, it is necessary, or they need something like that in Canada. Canadian cable companies are notorious for blocking competing services like voice over internet.
Right. Well, that's going to happen here if we're not careful.
So this really is not a regulation of the internet. It's a law to protect the internet, and it is something we need.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it is, though, if it doesn't pass, it doesn't mean anything because it can pass again. It's not like a law, an onerous law, right, is being passed. So it's not like a negative thing like this flag deal.
Right.
But, you know, so they can take another shot at it or two. So I think it'll eventually go through. Or either that, it may just go away if these, you know, the guys that run the cable companies and the phone companies stop, maybe shut up for a few minutes and quit threatening everybody with, well, you know, Google shouldn't have a free ride. I like to see what
Google doesn't have a free ride.
I know they don't.
Google
that's
pays
the
it there in. But that's what's amazing.
Can you imagine how much Google is paying?
Enormous amounts, and that's what's so pathetic about this is because of, you know, a few well-placed lobbyists and one idiot at AT&T and his cronies have been out there going, there's a free ride, we built those pipes to the household, and it's like, hey jerk, you know, when did you get to wire copper to every house in North America? When you were a protected corporate monopoly, you know, and guess what, you want free market, great. But it's like they're looking at the idea that they're looking at, you know, we want to be able, you know, it's we want to be able to create, and this is the interesting, we want to create a preferred carriage that will only be accessible if it's paid for by, you know, the server at the other end, and it's a complete line of dog snot.
Sorry. You know what's interesting about it? I mean, they already have tiered service in terms of the speeds you buy, and you know, we've already tolerated that. I mean, I don't know what more these guys want. The fact of the matter is they can, you know, do whatever they want with...
they don't want to have to deliver the speeds they claim they're delivering you.
Yeah, that's another thing. That should be a guaranteed speed. These guys should be arrested. This is fraud. They claim to be... all these guys give these claims of speed, and if you go, you check it on any service that checks speeds, and you're not getting those speeds. Why is that even? Why doesn't the district attorney go after these people? This is a consumer affairs department kind of thing. I mean, there's a scam going on here. It seems to me.
I don't know. Look, the other thing I find out I've been noticing is it's really interesting to watch the level of packet shaping that goes on in different packet shaping in the sense of limiting or throttling your speed depending on the traffic and where it's coming from and where it's going to.
And they do that with BitTorrent particularly because they don't like all that BitTorrent traffic.
I run into it a lot with streaming video and with video downloads. We run into it a lot.
When they talk about it, though, when they're not complaining about Google, what they talk about is the positive. They're saying, well, we can do, if for a little more money, you can get better quality of service for your voice.
But that's just
internet.
It. You're not. You see, the whole argument, right, part of the original argument behind this came from sort of an engineering economist at AT&T who was like, people want the equivalent of managed, people want the equivalent of a managed circuit, right? They want, people, the fundamental argument is if people actually want the bandwidth that they think they're paying for, it's going to cost us $400, you know, for a 5 megabit line instead of the $50 we're charging them monthly, right? And that it's completely unsustainable. And the flip side is a lot of the engineers, you know, and you can get into the whole argument versus, you know, college engineers versus, you know, university professors versus people out in the real, quote, real world, you know, is that a lot of people are saying the easiest way to deliver bandwidth on the cheap is to just step everything up to, you know, Internet 2 throughput speeds. But, you know, part of what AT&T engineers said, look, if everybody wants that video, you know, our network wasn't designed to do that. It was designed for burst transmissions here and there. And yeah, you know, we can give you like this speed, but we can't sustain it 24/7 for every user. That's impossible. And if you want that, you got to step up to a managed line that costs, you know, a couple, you know, $100, $400.
Is that the case? I mean, don't we get, I mean, sustained throughput, high sustained throughputs over, you know, these Fios and other high.
Well, I think Fios might be doing it, but do you think the average DSL customer can download it, you know, their maximum speed 24/7?
Yeah, I guess
I don't.
Well, certainly not if everybody did it at once. So in that case, they certainly have an argument. They're saying, well, look, everybody, all, you know, people are using it harder than they were before. We could give you that number when it was.
Well, how does that cost more, right? Because at the top level, the interchanges between backbones are peered, which means it's free exchange of packets. And at the lower level, I mean, are we talking about saturating routers so that they have to build additional equipment into the colo? I mean,
if they're not paying for their access. You're saying they're not paying for their access?
Well, if like AT&T, for example, AT&T is not just an ISP, but they're also a backbone, right? They control some of the fundamental lines on the internet. So where are they getting charged for this bandwidth that supposedly is breaking them?
I mean, they're charging themselves internally, but I think it's not unreasonable for them to say it's costing them something.
Well, it's costing them something, but where is it costing them? You know what I mean? It's like, I understand if they, you know, if they've wired every neighborhood in North America with the equivalent of, you know, 10 megabit per second Ethernet or 100, you know, megabit per second Ethernet. And I'm generalizing here before I get angry letters from network engineers. But, you know, and if the whole country wants to have, you know, 10 times, you know, gigabit Ethernet, then they have to upgrade equipment. But, you know,
but there is a certain amount of merit to the argument. I mean, look, we're kind of whiny, frankly, we consumers. We want everything cheap and free. And
hey, no, I don't. I didn't go with a $25, you know, $22
a month
service.
Most people do. But most people do. And most people are saying, I don't want to pay at all. And why am I having to pay so much? And I've said that myself. I've said that we pay more in the States than we do in most other countries. Is it unreasonable for them as a business to say, well, look, you want better service? You guys all want to watch YouTube 24 hours a day? You're going to have to pay us.
Well, if they actually do, you know, they're not delivering me the bandwidth a lot of the time that they currently claim they are.
Right.
Because I get the bandwidth if I go to, like, you know, bandwidthdetector.test.whatever it is. But if I'm actually real world on an application where I know I've got the bandwidth on the other end, then I can tell it's throttled.
I'm in agreement with Patrick. And the fact is, you know, these guys are selling something. It's not like they're, you know, it's just almost bait and switch. I mean, they say they're giving you, you know, 1.5 megabits per second or 6 or whatever their particular thing is. And within that range, if I'm getting 6, where is it?
Well, don't they say
and
up,
and then they
up
whine
to,
about, oh, you didn't expect you to use it.
Don't they say we're up gonna to 6? Do they actually say always 6? No, they say up to 6 megabits.
Yeah, well, does that mean I'm supposed to be getting 750?
No, so that means
up
like
to six means maybe when I get 6 once a year. Hey, on Tuesday in November 6th, we gave you 6 for 1 millisecond.
Well, I mean
what kind of a scam is this?
I don't know why
you're supporting these.
No, I'm
these,
playing devil's advocate here, but I think it's important that this argument be made because I'd like to hear the argument against it. You're not convincing me. I mean, if they built a network that was based on a certain amount of usage that wasn't sustained 6 megabits, but peaking at 6 megabits. And all of a sudden, everybody's looking for a sustained 6 megabits. The network doesn't support it.
Everybody's not looking. Most people are surfing the internet once in a while.
But more people
who's getting the 6? That's what I'd like to know. Where is that guy?
I get 4 or 5 regularly on my cable modem, and they bill it as up to 6, peaks at 6. But I'm not unhappy with.
Have
four
you ever
or five
gotten
megabits.
6? You ever gotten 6? Is up to 6?
Gee, I don't
have you
know.
Ever gotten it?
That's a good question. I don't.
I doubt it.
Well, I don't think anybody would know unless you were constantly monitoring.
Well, and a lot of people are, you know, I think if any of the numbers I've heard are real, right, and not just the fabrication of somebody who's trying to crush, you know, BitTorrent, you know, if they're claiming like some huge percentage of all traffic on the net right now is peer-to-peer file sharing, you know, that's an interesting thing, right? I mean, that's an interesting proposition, you know. It would be, you know, it's because I run into people who have some pretty a lot of Fios customers and certainly people at certain universities who aren't out on like the dormitory networks but are working in the labs and stuff. You know, they can download like DLTV at 2 megabits per second.
Well, if it's possible,
crazy insane numbers.
If it's possible to economically offer really high speed internet, in other words, if these guys are greedy and just claiming it's harder than it is, why doesn't some white knight come along and say, okay, well, you know, the truth is I can do it for $1.50.
Well, remember something, right? If you're the white knight, like right now, you know, I went with a cable modem instead of DSL when I moved into my new house because I no longer need a landline, right?
Right.
So if I need a white knight, I need a landline. So, you know, who's my white knight for DSL and do I want to put in a landline to do that? So what's my other option? Comcast cable.
Right. Yeah, well, it's clearly competition is the key here. And in fact, if anything, maybe we should be encouraging Congress to encourage competition and encourage alternate sources of internet. And if there is true competition, then wouldn't all of this go away?
Interesting thought.
Is there a couple of monopolists that know how to play the game better than we can argue?
They are
about
playing it very well. I mean, anyway, I agree, and I am absolutely in principle in favor of net neutrality. I was disappointed that the committee didn't add that to the bill. But at the same time, I think there are some legitimate arguments saying, well, you know, do we want to legislate this? And I think you've argued well in favor. So, all right, I'm supporting it.
The other thing is part of the whole reason this came up is because the baby bells want, you know, the blessing and love of the government to do what amounts to cable TV over the networks.
Right. No, I agree.
You know, I think that's a fair trade. If they want to be, you know, if they want to crush the cable TV networks or get into a running battle with them, the very least the federal government can do as an exchange is make sure that they're not going to crush the ability to download video from places other than, you know, insert name of my DSL provider's video project, you know.
right.
Because that's where it gets interesting, you know. Like Craig Newmark's argument is the whole like if I call for Joe's Pizza, you know, I want to get, you know, I want to directly dial up Joe's Pizza. I don't want, you know, to dial Joe's Pizza and have, you know, AT&T send me to, you know, Jimmy Joe Bob's Pizza and Barbecue because Jimmy Joe Bob's Pizza and Barbecue is a subset of AT&T, and you know, and then eventually if I choose not to do that, then they'll let me, you know, talk to Joe's Pizza at
a very
slow rate.
I hear these arguments. Now see, this again, this bugs me a little bit because I hear these arguments, but these are completely fabricated. Nobody's suggesting that I don't think AT&T's are going to suddenly substitute your search at Google with MSN search just because MSN gave them money. And if they did, I think then Howell's a protest, absolutely. But, I mean, that's hypothetical. I don't think anybody's
saying
that.
Okay, if I want to download video, right, and my ISP throttles any video that doesn't happen to be part of their flash, you know, video on demand service, you know, that's right there. That's effectively doing it. Will they move that direction in the future? I'm sure they'd like to.
I guess the question is, are they going to throttle or are they going to leave it the same and give you better bandwidth for their service?
Yeah, well, the problem is that they're already throttling now in a lot of cases.
This is whether or not they're throttling or whether or not it's hypothetical or not hypothetical, as Leo suggests. The fact of the matter is they've been hinting at it. They've been hinting at this is what they're going to do, and that's
I agree. There'd be no debate if they hadn't been rattling
the cage. If they had shut up.
Right. All right, let me add Bill McCrone, who is calling in. Bill, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, that's great. And, of course, Bill would have good quality headset microphone and sound great. I would expect that, and no less.
We were just talking about net neutrality, and, you know, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but... essentially,
before we do, I should probably introduce Bill because we have a long history. Bill McCrone was at PC Magazine editor. He was the guy who started Ziff Davis's entry into television, and I first met him when I auditioned for him in 1994 for the show that they were going to do on CNBC called.
MSNBC.
Well, no, this predates that. There was
MSNBC.
Oh, really?
No MSNBC. I thought we were.
Oh, okay.
This goes back to when we shot, Gina and I did the show with Jim Louderback at the old Apple TV studios.
That's right.
And it was, we had a couple of different names. In fact, at one point it was called Tech TV, ironically.
That's right.
And Bill, what are you doing? TV. What are you doing these days? Are you still writing for PC Mag at all?
I'm still a columnist. I guess that makes me the longest running columnist, maybe in the industry at this point, in one publication.
Doesn't Jerry Cornell have that right still?
Jerry's writing for Byte, but Byte's not really a magazine anymore, so I don't know if that counts.
Yeah, well, it's.
I think Bill has it. I mean, I was hoping he's going to quit so I could take it over, take the reins. But I'd have to be there another few years.
Hey, I had dinner with Stuart Alsop last night, so he's gunning for you. Look out, John.
Oh, wow, he's still around. So Bill is really the geek's geek and always has been. He was the guy who really formed PC Magazine and led it for many years. And I'm really glad we could get you on.
My pleasure.
Join the conversation. We're talking about net neutrality, and I'm afraid I've been cast in the role of devil's advocate on my own decision. And what we're really talking about, you know, my question is this really something we should be worried about? Yeah, sure, AT&T and Verizon have started rattling the cage about, oh, Google's stealing our bandwidth, and that's something to be concerned about. But do we really need to make a law, or won't just natural competition protect us from this?
Well, I don't think our politicians will protect us. So
we know that much. They've already decided not to. That, you know, they.
Yeah, and I have a link somewhere here to an MP3 of Ted Stevens invading.
Yeah, we were just listening to that.
Okay.
Yeah, you've
been
just
there, done
it.
That, huh?
Well, tell us your. In fact, I'm gonna. I'll edit this a little bit, but so you heard Ted Stevens kind of disjointed. Conversation about net neutrality or speech about net neutrality. What's your take on it?
I'd say that if anybody ever wants to know what the working definition of doublespeak is, they should just listen to Ed.
Do you think he's in the pockets of the big telcos?
I could not say, but you know, he has not exactly been Mr. Squeaky Clean, has he?
No.
We have a policy of describing him on the Dvorak blog as an a-hole.
Okay.
Ever judicious.
Something to do with Alaska?
Yes, exactly.
That's it. That's a ticket.
He's from Alaska. That's it. So I mean, I volunteered myself for this devil's advocate. I really think that what's happened is there's been this polarization between those who... you know, say net neutrality is a, you know, must, we've got to have it, and those who say, oh, that's ridiculous. And I don't think people are listening to the other side's arguments particularly, or even defeating the other side's arguments. So I thought it'd be important to kind of bring up the story.
Well, does that you know, you're kind of suggesting that the other side has a valid argument. If the other side has a valid argument, since you're playing devil's advocate, what is that valid argument?
Exactly what I just said, which is they built their networks for a certain amount of usage. They didn't plan on people using it as thoroughly and heavily as they are. They didn't plan for sustained 5 megabit downloads from, you know, a quarter of their customers, and they quite rightly say that if you want that kind of service, we're going to have to prioritize traffic. And
so if this is a legitimate argument, Leo, and they are so beholden to the consumers that keep them paid, right? Why are they not turning to us and saying, if you want guaranteed bandwidth, you, Patrick Norton, will have to pay X number of dollars more per month, and we will deliver that bandwidth to you, instead of going into Congress with lobbyists and saying, Google is ripping us off. They ain't paying free bandwidth when they come to our customers, right? Tell me that, Leo.
Well, I'll tell you exactly why. So the issue is they feel like customers are not going to pay any more money. They're very price sensitive as it is. And they feel it's only reasonable if providers like YouTube, like Google, want you know, better access to their customers. And this is where I think that the monopolies of the cable companies and the phone companies have a worldview that is a little distorted. They view us as their their customers, that they offer access to other people, you know, like Google and YouTube. They offer us to them. And that's why they want to go to them and say, look, if you want access to them, if you want better. And by the way, let's not say just access. They already have access. If you want better access, We'll be glad to give it to you, but somebody's got to pay for the line.
If you want guaranteed access.
That is so twisted. that is so twisted.
Why?
This internet would be nothing without what we've done here at AT&T to connect up our consumers to the internet. I mean, is that
exactly
the argument?
I mean, well, you're talking about the eight companies that are the top tier in terms of providing the high-speed backbone, and they're saying they're not making money on their backbone. Well, raise your price per gigabyte. Nobody's stopping them. But I see arguments from these guys that make it sound like it's universal access, that somehow the internet subsidizes individuals the way the phone companies do. And I think I heard Steven say that until one of his underlings corrected him. So there's a lot of general purpose misunderstanding out there.
It may be a worldview issue. I mean, I think that there definitely is a worldview that the big providers have that's somewhat disjointed from what the actual facts are.
But we're not their customers.
Right.
The metropolitan area networks are their customers, and the ISPs are their customers, and they're about four tiers away from us.
Right, right.
I mean, just have to do... look at the number of hops and where your signal goes to get from here to there, and they're up at the top of the chain, and nothing to do with us.
They're just greedy sons of guns.
Well, yeah,
sons of guns.
I'm not going to call them greedy. I'm going to call them stupid because they don't know how to price their own products.
You know, I think there's something to that. And the fact of the matter is, I don't think these guys really get what they're into and what they're doing. And I think
you're saying we should be paying more.
Their stupidity is what we're talking about. And I tell you the reason why I'm totally convinced that Bill's right on this, because their representative is Ted Stevens. Come on. This is the guy. Their front man is Ted Stevens. I mean, come on.
The problem is that they're not charging us enough?
No, they're not charging enough for access, period. They charge by the gigabyte, terabyte, monster byte, whatever.
Backbone, the real access.
All right, but it'll be passed along to us. I mean, if they charge the...
Or it gets passed along to Google and Yahoo's profits.
They're looking for... You know what? There's something... That's what I think maybe we're getting at here. There's some scam going on, because if all this was just about, access and
just
what it cost... Just up the ante and then do it on the backbone side, and everybody just has to pay more. There's something else. They're trying to nickel and dime us to death with some scam.
Well,
that's what's going on.
Let me propose
this. Scam.
Maybe the scam is an anti-competitive scam. They're worried about voice over the internet. They're worried about YouTube and Google providing television and Apple providing television
before
they can. So is it an anti-competitive issue?
I'm sorry. They've been talking about this, voiceover, the video dial tone for the last 25 years that I recall. And they've never been able to deliver it. And I think it's possible. They're looking left and right, and they're seeing all the stuff going on. They're saying, oh, my God, what do we do to slow this down? We can't keep up. We're too stupid.
Well, I'll tell you one thing I do know for a fact is that they don't like the business model of merely making money on bits. They, both the cable companies and, I think, to some extent, the telcos, see themselves as making their money on premium services, selling premium services on top of those bits. They don't want to be a data provider.
Well, certainly the cell phone networks are realizing it's much easier
because they spend so much money
subsidizing cell phones.
It's easier
to skim profits out of.
I think we made our point. Why don't we go to another topic?
All right. Topic number two, Microsoft delays Office 2007 till sometime in 2007, saying it's not ready yet.
Will it ever be ready?
I've been playing with it, and of course Vista Beta 2, and they both seem fairly ready. I'm not sure exactly what the issue is, but why is it Microsoft's having such trouble getting these products out the door?
Well, they're phenomenally complex, for one thing. I mean, as if 2003 and XP weren't complex enough, they're layering even more stuff on there, and of course they're building all of this phone home stuff into their software, so that which is not getting a great reception out there, so they're having to re-engineer some portions of that to make it a little more socially acceptable.
You're talking about the Windows Genuine Advantage type stuff or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Worse? Yeah,
okay. Exactly. Now, well, who knows what else is in there, but certainly Genuine Advantage is a silly thing.
To Microsoft's credit, they're doing 2 million. They shipped out 2 million betas of Vista 2. They just closed it down, by the way, on Friday. So that's it if you didn't get it. In fact, they say if you haven't activated your beta, activate, because we don't guarantee you'll be able to activate much longer.
Hey, Bill, for people out there who don't know, can you explain Windows Genuine Advantage?
No, I can't.
I'll try. It is an anti-piracy technology. When you Microsoft introduced this shortly after Service Pack 2.
How's this an advantage?
Yeah, well, that's a good question.
Well, that's just clever marketing. It's like Patriot Act.
who's advantage? Microsoft's. But I can't blame them for trying to protect themselves against piracy.
Except that it slows down all of the people who aren't pirates. I mean, classic case.
As usual. You know, well, and not only that, it seems to be broken substantially. I talked to a lot of people who have legitimate copies of Windows who are told they don't have legitimate copies.
Right.
And then there's the greater issue of the fact that it was actually phoning home daily, which
yes.
Microsoft says they're going to stop doing.
Yes.
I can't imagine what it's asking about. Is it okay to run? Can I run now? Is it okay now?
Well, We've seen some really egregious stuff on the part of manufacturers. I monitor all new software that I install, and my wife got an HP computer a while ago. It's subsequently been replaced, but it suddenly lit up my packet detector, and I was wondering what it was doing, and traced it back to the keyboard driver, and it was calling some server deep in the bowels of Packard. So I, of course, locked it out, and then called the PR people at HP, and they were completely baffled and embarrassed about the whole thing, and they went down the chain of command and found some engineer deep in the bowels of the organization who said, oh yeah, I wrote that driver, and I put a little call home feature in there because I wanted to see what programmable function keys people were using.
Oh my goodness.
Nothing like doing a little market research on the backs of your customers.
Oh my goodness.
I'm pretty thoroughly impressed that you were able to get to the bottom of that.
That is impressive, yeah.
I was amazed myself. And but, you know, There's all kinds of stuff like that going on in the world, and you never know until you...
But doesn't that also mean that you could have some guy who writes drivers in the back of any big company like HP writing all kinds of queries back to the home office for who knows what? Sounds like a bad back door to me.
Yeah, and you have no control over it.
Well, that's the thing you'd wonder about HP's QC, that they didn't notice that themselves.
Well, the QC guys probably never thought about it. Right. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, it's logging in. Right. Or else, they approved it all up and down the line.
Now, let's get realistic about QC nowadays when it comes to computers. These things are rolling off a line in northern China by the millions. And the QC is like some, a bunch of people with rubber mallets pounding the side of the machine. If it doesn't blow up, it gets shipped. Come on.
Sometimes QC. I think you're right. Sometimes I think you're right.
I've seen these factories. I am right. Believe me.
Yeah.
So speaking of pounding things with the rubber mallets, they don't have to worry about pounding anything on the space shuttle. They just got to worry about launching it somewhere instead of Florida.
It's all weather, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, I know it's a big issue to do something, but I just don't understand why they keep launching out of Cape Canaveral. I mean, they should launch from the middle of Death Valley because it's a blue sky every day.
Vandenberg's nice.
As long as it's far enough south, but you know the whole thing is about recovering the boosters,
the SRBs,
they fall in the ocean, and of course the Russians never had that problem.
No, they
just land in cities.
Yeah,
well, the Russians at the USSR at the time had a slightly different sort of impact. They're a little less worried about the impact on communities and or the environment. Not that blowing off rockets doesn't spew a lot of insane stuff into the ether.
Pack up and move communities the same way as China packs up and moves people out of when they built that Three Gorges Dam. They're like, we're going to flood your town. Get out.
Now that's eminent domain. That's power.
So Jump into a new story. Has anyone noticed a story about Alaska trying to sell a school on eBay? Is it anybody follow?
No, what? Tell us about it.
So the eBay, is that the tech angle?
is that tedsahole.com? Is that where you send your PayPal?
It's actually a very expensive. It's at $1.8 million for this Aleutians East Borough school. I don't know why you would. It's 43,000 square feet.
Yeah, it's a warehouse, which is the way most schools are built just nowadays, if anyone hasn't noticed.
And it's on the waterfront.
Block.
They're going to turn it into a seafood processing plant. That's what they're going to do. That's why.
Okay, red hat slapped with a patent suit.
are you just dipping your finger in the story
pool? I'm just going
pool?
For it. You know, we spent so much time on that net neutrality thing that people must be listening to the show thinking that we're, you know, just
I'll cut
not
it down.
Paying.
I'll cut it down. Don't worry.
Yeah, I know you always say that.
I'll cut it down to the seminal 5 minutes. Don't worry. Bill, I'm sorry you had to be here for this bickering.
Oh, that's okay. It's very enjoyable, actually.
Anyway, the red hat suit.
All right.
Anything?
Yeah. Filestar has filed a claim against Red Hat for patent infringement. I don't even do these stories anymore.
Okay,
because
no story. There's no story.
Anybody can file a patent lawsuit, and they often do.
New attack, flaw in Apple computers. I'm not getting anything there.
It's actually interesting because this actually attacks a flaw that Apple thought it patched. There was a fairly large patch that went out this week for OS 10 users, and including a patch for a security hole in LaunchD, and apparently this attack found a continuing hole in it. You know, the problem with this is the story comes from Symantec, who makes, interestingly enough, security software for OS 10. I'm always a little suspect when a company that makes security software tries to play up these vulnerabilities, especially since there has been no evidence of it in the wild at all. So,
all right. Well, let's jump to this story. This one here, this one fascinates me.
Okay.
By the way, Bill, we have a list of stories that we can send you.
Yeah, but
you
don't need it. Believe me, it's
no, you don't need it because obviously these stories are so thin that you're not going to need to know anything.
Well, I hadn't pruned them yet, and that's my fault for.
Okay, Western Digital settles. Does anyone find this to be actually kind of a funny story? Because I've always thought it was slightly confusing the way they would present these. You know, what I got an 80 gigabyte drive, and then you do the calculation, it's something else.
Oh, you mean the whole one divisible by 1024 type of thing?
Decimal versus binary. There's actually somebody sued over that?
Yeah, they got sued. Western Digital got sued for calling. Let me read you from the story.
Well, they say it now very clearly in the ads on the packaging. 1 billion bytes equals 1,000000000000000. They always say that now because they
Well, what's so ludicrous about they call their 80 gigabyte drive they got sued because it only had 79, 0.9725427 gigabytes, 70.
That's the only reason I'd ever want to be a judge is so I could get cases like that and throw,
and throw them out.
just throw them into jail just for bringing cases like that.
But now there have been some legitimate suits. Remember, there was the lawsuit over screen monitor measurements where they were including the black edges on the old CRTs. I mean, there have been cases where it's a little
woohoo, but. We all knew what size TV we were getting, and a 27-inch TV, you could just buy them by the pound or the depth or anything, because everything else was the same.
Right. No, that's a very good point.
Yeah. But people just love to sue for, incredibly stupid things. So,
speaking of suits, we were talking about WGA. There is a class action lawsuit against Microsoft for Windows Genuine Advantage. Let me see if I can find that story, because that might be a lawsuit that you would back up. I don't know. Let's see.
You're talking about the class action suit?
Yeah. It was filed on Monday in Seattle, and the lawsuit alleges the program violates consumer protection laws in California and Washington State spyware and invasive programs that surreptitiously collect data. I mean, nobody's denying that WGA does.
Yeah, the irony that Washington State has probably the most onerous laws in that regard that not let you do that. You probably can start a business and make money by busting people for spyware in Washington State.
Well,
California less so.
Interesting revelation though in this suit. For instance, Microsoft admits this. There was a high priority update. I think in April, one of those critical updates Turns out it was just a test version of the WGA software that Microsoft was pushing out.
Gee, it sounds like those terror alerts they have just before the elections.
Yeah, no kidding.
Wait, but WGA is manufactured specifically to keep people from pirating their operating system, right?
But everybody who runs XP now, it wants updates, needs to be running it.
And so, like, the whole issue is if you're running a fake, a non-validated Windows, you don't need to be spreading viruses because you don't have the latest patch.
Well, now, and this, to the Microsoft's credit, I don't know how much longer they'll do this, they do still give you critical updates. So security updates are still available even if you're running pirated versions of Windows. Not if you're running legitimate versions of Windows 98, but if you are running...
Well, they're not supporting Windows 98 Windows ME anymore.
No.
Right, they're dead.
Go ahead.
Part of the whole point of this was that they were just going to start blacking, like shutting down systems that weren't accepting Windows Genuine Advantage.
Now, I haven't heard that.
Well, they did threaten to do that early on, and there was such a hue and cry that they immediately backed away from that. People would rather go back to the days of Bill Gates stepping on little companies.
Yeah. Microsoft did release a new version of WGA that allows you to at least turn off the notifications. It also doesn't check phone home quite as often. But the real problem, right, I think, is that it's, and I'll say this again because it keeps happening, is it does also flag legitimate software frequently. And then you got this notification. You still can get your updates. You can't download the next DirectX 9 or, you know, copies of Paint.net or whatever, but you can get the critical updates.
Paint.net.
Whatever it is. There is a Paint.net. It's not from Microsoft. What is the name of that Microsoft Paint program?
MS Paint?
No. They actually have a pretty good little graphics program that they pushed out for free. But you had
the ones from years ago? The one that they pulled? They don't have it anymore? That cool little thing that did all kinds of weird stuff, and then they just disappeared.
I don't think it's that old. I think it was recently.
Oh, well, there was one I remember.
There was a Paint program that went by the
board. Was it called Max?
Max, no. That's the one I'm thinking of.
Was it Max?
No, yeah, that's the one.
But Max is like a Picasa, I think.
Yeah, it's you can only get it if you are a genuine Windows user. Like, who cares?
What does that mean?
Who cares? I don't care. I don't want
Windows.
I'm a genuine Windows user.
So what do you guys think of France and the passage of this new DRM law and its effects on...
I'm confused
by it. I guess pretty much iTunes. I'm confused by it.
I can't understand what the issue is.
Well, I think it's a legitimate... defending the bad guys, but I think it's a legitimate issue, which is that Apple...
It's a fair play DRM law that says that if you're going to sell something that has, well, copy protection, like all the music that you purchase off the iTunes Music Store, the fair play junk part of the law says that you got to let it be compatible with competing with other people's music players. So,
but
a creative jukebox or something that you should be able to play your iTunes downloaded music.
And I think that's fair. I mean, I think it's trying to break Apple's monopoly as iTunes iPod Axis. But there are legitimate outs. If the artist and the labels say, "Oh, that's okay," then you don't have to share your DRM.
The out is saying make an exclusive deal with a company to distribute your music.
Right. Oh, I see. So if somebody else is selling it, then you're out of luck.
So if you're the Beatles or whoever owns the Beatles, I guess it's Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And you want to distribute Beatles music, which they're not able to do on iTunes right now anyway, but if you want to distribute it specifically for the Nomad jukebox, you know, you can sign a deal with Michael Jackson and tell Apple to go, you know, do whatever they want to do.
I don't, I'm still not getting this, what you're saying. Well, I mean, why couldn't you do that before?
Well, the short answer is that the law does two things. One, it does what it's supposed to in theory, which is allow interoperability so that I can play any secured music on any player, right? That's the theory.
Right.
And then they had a loophole inside of that that said Apple can basically not allow its music to be played on competitors' players if and only if they get the permission from the artist to do so.
Right. There's also the open source community was a little upset about it because they would have to provide this information on interoperability under NDA, and it would actually leave open source developers out of the loop. Or if they were in the loop, they couldn't publish the source code. It would no longer be open source. So Richard Stallman was a little upset about that.
Am I wrong in hasn't the hacking community busted this system by now, so you could take an iTunes piece of music and run it on an old anybody's MP3 player?
No, actually, they did for a while. In fact, it was DVD John, or Jan, I don't know how you pronounce it, but who cracked it. He cracked the Fair Play copy protection and created a program called Play Fair. But then Apple updated iTunes, and ever since version 6, it hasn't worked. You haven't been able to strip it out.
The only way I know to do it is to burn a CD.
Hole.
Go through the virtual CD.
They're trying to get the analog hole plugged, too. I don't know what the status of that is in Congress, as long as we're covering that.
Yeah, they're always trying to plug holes.
He's an Alaska hole, actually.
Yeah, are we talking about Ted again?
Hey, Ted again. He's back.
Goodness.
Here's
there is a push to close the audio hole and the video. Of course, MacroVision does, in effect, close the video hole, right, unless you know how to get around it. But they're trying to do that with audio, too, where they're encoding, ultrasonic things that create distortion unless it's the original copy. And,
pretty soon they'll have it so you can't even hear it yourself.
Yeah, you have to pay them $1 every time you listen.
You need special ears. You need ears implanted.
DRM ears.
You have to borrow some ears.
Money to be made.
Somebody has scammed the Nigerian scammers. An interesting story from Australia. The 419 scams where the Nigerians say, I have $15 million, help me get it out, and I'll give you 10%. So there is an anti-419 site. And the guy who runs it, he says, my goal is just to keep the 419 scammers so busy they don't have time to steal. And these scams actually are surprisingly effective given how much publicity and how far-fetched it is.
There's been a few famous people that were busted, got caught in these scams. By the way, there's another group that's been doing this a lot longer than these guys.
Oh, really?
And I blogged them a couple of years ago, and it's still on the blog somewhere. But this guy took it to one other extreme. He would actually start to... he would agree to do all this stuff, and then he'd give these guys the run around, and eventually almost get them to do silly things.
That's what this, this is.
Okay, well, this may be the same group,
I don't know.
They've been around for a while.
The website's called 419eater.com, and the guy's pseudonym is Shiver Me Timbers. And he's been getting these 419ers to do things for him. In this case, wooden sculptures of a Commodore 64 keyboard.
It's so awesome.
And apparently
the show of good faith is critical to
right.
any confidence game.
That's right. That's the good
and
faith.
I really like that.
Okay, I just looked it up. These guys, this is which makes the story even kind of more interesting in some weird way. The 409 Eater, I actually first blogged it in 7/17/2004. So these guys are obviously going around the horn again with the publicity for themselves.
Well, good for them. I didn't realize
they've seen the next level. They got some.
Yeah, well, they
jerks to carve out an entire
Commodore 64.
That's a good one. Well, he had the picture I have from like 2 years ago is they created a fake church and got these guys to join it, and they had to put all kinds of weird markings on their bodies and then send pictures around. So it's just a group of people like to humiliate dummies.
And then the best part is that they sent to the... So they got the Nigerian... This is the good faith bit. They got the Nigerian scammer to carve this keyboard and some other intricate little models. And then they sent a note from the police, the Australian police, saying, you've been dealing with a notorious art forger who's been arrested. Oh, we're so sorry you got scammed. I just love it. I think it's give them more publicity, John. It's fine.
Yeah, we blogged this particular latest story too, because there's one picture they apparently had them carving all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
I think that was creative because you can get the carvings. It'd be kind of nice to have them around the house.
Yeah, then they would use Photoshop to distort the picture and say, oh no, it got hurt somehow in transit. You need to send us another one. I love it. I think that's fine. Anything to tie up these guys in knots. There was a very good New Yorker article about a month ago about a fella who. A preacher, in fact, who got sucked so deep in the 419 scam that he was actually prosecuted in the U.S. and convicted of a felony because he started passing checks and so forth.
Well, remember when we did the Q&A with the Secret Service?
Yeah.
I mean, the thing they said is they still investigate hundreds and hundreds of 419 scams every year.
And they wish they didn't have to, frankly. They think there are better things to be doing.
How do people get so out of touch that, I mean, this has been going on for years. I mean, people have written columns about it. There's been a million things, and they just still don't get the word out. I mean, it's amazing to me.
But there's always somebody new, you know, in the retirement community who gets their first computer or whatever. And
well, it's not just the retirement community.
Stevens from Alaska has fallen for it.
Wouldn't that be funny if he got scammed? You know, there's people in Nigeria who have internet access, and they're paying for it.
No, I think we should maybe form a Scam Stevens Society and just pretend to be the ninth big telco. And
I would like to officially distance myself from this conversation.
I really think this is
I'm the one who usually I have absolutely no interest in.
Nothing illegal, absolutely.
Yeah. It's not the illegal I'm worried about. We're just kidding.
Wait a minute.
Is there anything illegal about us forming a telco?
No.
I don't think there's any actual reason to have any capital equipment or anything, you know, silly like that. We could simply organize ourselves a telco, hire ourselves a lobbyist. I vote for Patrick. You know, he's a very honest-looking guy.
Plus, I can lie like a cheap rug from Sears.
And, so, I mean, here's our man in Washington. a couple of lunches, and I'd say we'd have the guy dead to rights.
Senator Stevens, I want to tell you about what you haven't been considering about net neutrality, which you really need to embrace for the citizens that are going to re-elect you next year.
Love this. You're on a roll, dude. Keep
buy me another suit, man.
So, David Pogue, in his column, New York Times columnist David Pogue, his column on the internet reveals that, in fact, the Toshiba high-def DVD player, the first HD DVD player, which costs $500, actually loses Toshiba $200 on every player. It costs them more than $700 to make. So why, he says, are they making it? And he says that, in fact, Microsoft, he believes, he has no evidence for this, that Microsoft is underwriting it.
Oh, please. You know, what planet did he come from anyway? This kind of marketing has been going on forever. If you buy the first plasmas that come out, they're shipping about a $500 bill with each one.
Excuse me, how many millions of console gaming units?
Are always sold at a loss. Sure. I mean,
Wait a minute. Aren't cell phones sold at a loss by every...
All right. Okay.
Maybe they used to. I don't know.
You know, this anymore. Is like, you know, his next article is going to be about how some lawyers are crooked. I mean, come on.
Well, here's an interesting thing, because I just logged into this article, and it's got an address, an email address for me. I don't know where it got it, that I haven't had in 10 years. So I don't know what's going on there. Does the New York Times keep track of my old email addresses?
Obviously, they do.
There's a conspiracy theory we've got going there.
Maybe they have a reason to.
Maybe. I don't know.
Anyway, the apparently the Blu-ray they're going to sell. You know, they're not going to make any money on that either. They might not sell it at a $200 loss.
But well, yeah, that one's several hundred dollars more expensive than the HD.
It's a thou.
Yeah, you know, so right. Maybe
that's why you got to buy the Sony PS3. It's only $500.
Yeah, that's
oh Blu-ray. Okay. Hey, ship me one tomorrow, David. Okay, bring it over to the house.
I'm waiting. I told my son you can have a game console as soon as Sony's PS3 comes out. Let's wait for that.
And wait.
Yeah, I mean the other thing is a lot of these estimates of what devices cost to build. I've noticed a lot of them tend not to take in little things like bulk discounts or existing relationships with parts suppliers.
It's hard to really know how much it costs.
Yeah, you can get pretty close.
I'm not saying you can't get pretty close, but some of them have been sort of, you know, I've seen some that listed close to retail prices for parts. You know, I don't know. It's interesting. It's Toshiba's actually already started. Toshiba's already started saying that they're actually making a profit on these boxes.
Really?
Yeah. You know,
with a good bookkeeper, you can make a profit on anything.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that Toshiba came back that quickly and was like, "This is ridiculous."
Early adopters are there of the HD DVD player already?
They seem to be selling out.
They said they were sold out, but I don't know.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
Let me phrase it, John. I mean, I can't. I mean, they built, supposedly they built around 10,000 in the first run, and we were actually trying to find one to purchase to do a comparison with the Blu-ray player. We had the Samsung Blu-ray player in, which is a pretty good unit. It's unfortunate the initial run of Blu-ray discs aren't that hot, but the Blu-ray player is pretty solid. But
so they wouldn't send you a review unit because they were so hot off the press?
No, we couldn't find any for sale in Northern California. I mean, we couldn't find any for sale that weren't being delayed for a couple of weeks. So they may actually have sold out completely on the first run of those. Mm-hmm. I mean, and they're picking up some momentum. They got 70 or 90 titles out already. So it'll be interesting to see how fast Blu-ray comes out.
What I don't get, you know, to be honest about it, because you talk about these things having a run. I don't know why these things are having a run at all. They should be in continuous production. They don't make runs of a device that they're going to be, you know, putting into the public at these kinds of numbers and millions of units eventually. It doesn't make sense to me that they would, that there's not a ship coming over right now loaded up with these, unless they just sent a bunch of tests, or maybe the ones that just cost too much to make and they got a cheaper one they're working on. Well, I don't know.
It seems logical to me that they do run, because what if they don't sell on the first run? Then all of a sudden they don't have to spend as much money on increasing their losses.
Well, they did some pretty poor marketing or market planning, it seems to me. I don't think that these guys roll out a product that's this complicated without knowing exactly what the demand's going to be.
All right, so what is the real demand driver for HD DVD? Is it sports or porn?
Neither.
Always
actually.
Asking the tough questions.
It's regular movies.
No. Yeah. It's beautiful nature documentaries.
Well, there aren't any. Well, yes. There isn't
the
any
cherry blossoms. I get it. The cherry blossoms.
Yes. Well, there's no prawn. There's no nature documentaries, and there's no. There's no
just a bunch of Mila. It's just
good movies.
There's actually some really good movies.
Okay,
my personal favorite right now still being Goodfellas, and it's also really good transfers.
Are they doing a good job with the transfers? That actually is important.
I think the HD DVD ones seem to have been. It's interesting that we've got pretty much all the first five or six Blu-ray titles in house, and what's shocking about a couple of them is that either they couldn't get a decent film to scan for the transfer, or they didn't care, because you're looking at scratches in the film specs and dirt, and it's really quite impressive when you're looking at it.
Wow,
you know, 50
kidding.
To 60 inch screen.
It sounds like they were rushed in that case. I mean, maybe they didn't have the opportunity to get pristine prints.
Well, there's a lot of interesting dialogue about how they're handling the initial run of Blu-ray discs, and you know how what level of security is being employed on them, it was interesting. But I mean, the Samsung player itself is doing a really good job, right? It's a smidge faster than the Toshiba. The Toshiba is essentially a Linux box,
right?
And we're waiting
slow.
For the reason. Well, here's the thing. One of the reasons we're waiting for another review unit to come in is because supposedly they've done a pretty hefty firmware upgrade that's going to improve a lot of the performance issues.
Can they push those out, or do you have to bring yours in to get it upgraded?
It's designed to be pushed out and done over the internet.
Oh, that's cool.
That's very clever of them. They're very smart of them, I think, probably.
Patrick, when you talk about these movies that you've looked at that you say they did a crappy, you know, and they got the scratch, are people standing up and moving around? And is the, you know, do you see somebody in the audience get up? I mean, is that the kind of quality? This is not good.
This is not good.
It's kind of like you laugh, right? You go to a movie in a theater and it's been out for 5 or 6 weeks, and occasionally you see some scuffs or some splices
and
or a little scratch. And this is better than that, but it's still highly noticeable because you're looking at this, right? And it's, you know, you're looking at these movies and you're thinking okay, what do we got here? Terminator, you know, not the priciest film stock used to shoot that, but you know, you're looking at some of the other Blu-ray titles that are available. And you're sitting there and going, I'm trying to think of one I was watching where I was sitting there going, wow, there's another scratch, there's another scratch, there's another scuff.
Wait,
another scratch.
You mean HD, right?
No, Blu-ray.
No, I'm talking about Blu-ray. The HD DVD stuff, one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had with home theater was looking at Goodfellas in HD DVD on a 60-inch monitor.
I bet that looks good, because
it looked amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
One more time. Now, what you're describing is kind of weird, it seems to me, because I have seen these same movies, not all of them that I saw in that pile, but I've seen that pile, But I've seen Terminator and some of these others, and or the, you know, and I have seen them on Mark Cuban's HDNet, and I've seen them on HBO and high def on a big projector, and I've never seen these scratches. Why don't they? Where did they rescan these old films? I mean, why don't they just take? I mean, these have been digitized by somebody else before. I just baffling to me.
Not saying. At 1080p though. It probably did have to redo it because they probably never did it at 1080p.
What else would they do it in?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm wondering what they would have scanned it. 720? I don't know, but
that makes sense. The HBO
I don't know. First of all, you know, I have no idea whether Cuban is doing his own scans for his network or whether or not he's using. I mean, because there are a lot of people, you know, anybody who can get a print can scan a video, right? Not necessarily legally, but it was like it seemed like, you know, I can totally see a situation where somebody went, you know, grabbed five Sony films, ran them down to somebody, had them scanned, and then encoded them really fast to make the delivery.
That's what I think it is. I think they were rushed, and I'm sure they'll fix it. And
what studio is behind this release? How? You know, what studio is going to put their name on crap?
You wonder. Yeah, you wonder.
Well, Sony.
Scandal.
Scandalous. Well, I'd be mad if I bought a $1,000 Blu-ray player and all I saw was scratches.
Scratched up old movie. Yeah. You know, I just...
Hey, I actually wanted to ask Bill McCrone about the decision that Microsoft made not to ship a standalone version of the Win file system, the WinFS file system with Vista. Is that significant? I mean, they took it out of Vista. They promised it in Vista, took it out, but said, well, we'll ship it standalone later. And then last week they announced, or it was hard to determine what they were trying to say, but it sounded like they weren't going to ever do a standalone
version.
Sounds
like they're not going to do it. And I've got to think that that is some hedge, yet another hedge against the open source community. There are so many things going on there, and the open source operating systems are gaining so much power that I have to think that it's just another attempt to keep people locked into Windows Server.
NTFS and Windows Server.
Yeah, exactly.
So, in other words, if they shipped a new file system, and it's, of course, a databasing file system with better search and so forth. If they did that, you're afraid, their fear is that people would just ignore it and go to open source solutions?
Or that the open source solutions would hook on to the new file system.
Samba and so forth would start.
Exactly. Yeah. And just run it. We're seeing... AMD and Intel are involved in this kind of stuff too, you know, because they're both feeding the open source community and trying to keep it at arm's length in order to maintain their relationship with Microsoft. And they're doing an even better job than the politicians at Doublespeak, trying to keep both ends from meeting in the middle.
Speaking of AMD and Intel, Intel is really making a push now to take back some of the ground it's lost from AMD over the last couple of years and making announcements of new chips, new Xeon chips and so forth, that they say will beat AMD. Patrick, are you guys doing any testing? Bill, anybody take a look at these?
I've been looking at the technology, and Intel's problem is they went off on that branch prediction branch, and
these really long pipelines,
and they said, no, it's no problem because the cache is deep, and if it flushes, well, code was never as pretty as Intel's engineers said it was going to be. So
started with Prescott, which was just a
bust. It's an old problem that unfortunately took over the product line and really hurt Xeon much more than the desktop, which surprises me because you would think that server code would be more regular, but even HTTP services, you know, the world throws so much crap at your server that you'd better be able to switch horses really quickly to keep up with it all.
So what is Intel doing? I mean, are they doing a RISC chip? I mean, how are they?
Yeah, I mean, they're basically emulating their own instruction set and shortening their pipeline and doing everything they can to make the chip more facile and also give it more internal speed and less dependence on the front side bus. I mean, that was AMD's genius with the Opteron, is that they basically said, we've got hypertransport, which they announced, what, 6 years ago, more?
Right.
And
took a while for Intel to catch up to that.
And I don't know that they've actually caught up. I think that if you look at what Sun and Fabric 7 and some of these hot server companies are doing with 8-way AMD servers, they're rocket ships.
Right.
They are really fast machines. No Xeon can touch them.
Well, and in fact, Dell has announced that it's buying a bunch of AMD chips for its servers, which is a big shift for
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I mean, we've all heard Michael Dell and all of those people proclaim to their undying loyalty to Intel.
You know, we haven't seen, I talked to the guy that runs that division. He was in town a couple of weeks ago, the Dell guy. And I specifically asked him about this because we've always known that these guys are pretty much, they're wedded, Dell and Intel, although there's been there's been a few industry hiccups between the two of them because Dell's become such a big customer for Intel that Intel doesn't like that because they don't like to have, a customer telling them what to do. And meanwhile, Dell's been loyal and back and forth. So I asked him specifically if at the drop of a hat, Intel improved either their chips or their deal, if they drop AMD like a lead balloon.
Which, not a loaded question or anything.
No, I try to be blunt when I ask these questions. You get a better answer that way. And the answer, which was, of course, not a great answer, but it's kind of answered it. The guy said specifically, he says, we'll always go with the best technology out there. Never, of course, said yes or no to the question, but what he said to me was, and with the hints out there that Intel's got some hot stuff coming, this whole thing may have been a big bluff. Even though, like Bill said, those 8-way machines are apparently just rocket ships.
Maybe it just indicates a weakening in Intel's market power, and Dell can finally safely say, well, we're not tied to you anymore.
Dell's, in the last couple of years, Dell's really gotten big in the last couple of years.
Right.
I've been told by some people that are in the chip business that Intel, because Dell was buying so many chips and they were getting such a good deal from Intel, that Intel was telling Dell, and this may or may not be true, but Intel was telling Dell that, you can only get you so many, you're going to have to go to the gray market to get the rest of your requirements because we just can't provide that many chips. And Intel, in fact, was shipping chips over to the gray market so they could get a little few more dollars from Dell because it was hurting their bottom line. Now,
that's an old story.
It is an old story, but it's an old story. I mean, that's what the chip companies do.
Yes.
I mean, but this story cropped up recently around this Dell deal, and then it just within 6 months after I heard that story, this announcement comes out about the AMD chips, which we still really haven't seen. So I think this is a political thing.
Well,
that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
it doesn't hurt anybody if it is just saber rattling. It helps AMD just by reputation,
you
even
bet.
If they never sell a single chip to Dell. And and they're still sitting on top of the server world.
So
everybody wants Opterons.
These new Xeons aren't enough, you think, to knock AMD off the perch?
AMD's got their quad chips, if not quite ready to go. They're pretty close. They have a huge new plant that's cranking out all the 65 nanometer stuff that they can make, and they're ready to up their speeds. Well, actually, they don't want to go much faster in speed. They're finding, especially with hypertransport, that they can just put more CPUs on the chip and get more and more performance.
Yeah, and more level 2 cache.
Well, my understanding is that there's a hot chip coming out from Intel that's a desktop chip that's going to be a mind blower.
You mean the Core Duo, the Core 2 Duo stuff that's coming out?
I guess.
Is that essentially a 4-way core?
I don't think so. I think it's just a fast 4
just a faster
plus
duo.
Gigahertz.
Yeah, it's a fast. Yeah, the Core 2 Duo is the update, the higher internal speed Core Duo.
Okay. 800 bus and the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's fast, but...
Yeah. Consumer part, and they're releasing it, you know, this month, and they're releasing it from the low end to the high end and not staggering the delivery, that a lot of the initial benchmarking is putting it, in many cases, 30% faster than anything AMD's got.
Right.
You know, and there's going to be cheap versions of it, too.
But, you know, how long is it? I mean, AMD may have something up its sleeve. I mean,
I don't think AMD has anything up its sleeve until the 4x4 for the consumers, till the 4x4 stuff comes out later this month. Or it should be later this year.
Surprisingly, they're doing a single core.
That can't be really used to the optimal.
Surprisingly, they're doing a single core Conroe too, which I thought that the whole single core stuff was just gone. I mean,
there's still a lot of single execution thread games out there, and that's where the original AMD 64
right.
Stole Intel Thunder.
Right.
And I think they need that chip for reputation. As much as anything else.
For gaming.
Yeah, because the gamers drive so much,
right.
Upgrade every time there's something new. Yeah.
Yeah, well.
So you can frag your buddies even faster. Yeah.
Well, just remember, the internet is just a tube, my friends. And
well, I hope I'm hoping upon hope that these new faster chips and the competition between AMD and Intel, no matter what the politics are, actually results in some new applications coming out that can be useful to the average user. Because right now, it's nice to have these screaming machines, especially if you're running Photoshop. But for the most part, I'd like to see, you know, some new uses. I mean, we haven't had any really great new uses for these computers.
You've been saying
for
this for years, John. Where's the new killer app?
I'm like an old man.
Where's the new? But you've been
Get
right.
off my lawn.
You've been right. There really hasn't been a killer app in the way that, you know, Lotus 1-2-3 was a killer app, or VisiCalc, in some time.
I don't know if that was a killer app. It was just like the original app.
There was the original, the first.
Now, the original app was VisiCalc.
You know, you could also say home theater PCs is probably the last. Yeah, you know, maybe. Home theater PCs, VoIP. I mean, what are the other big things that have come out in the last couple of years? Online video delivery.
True.
Well, do you need faster chips for that? I mean, one of the things where I see a performance increase is rendering DVDs. And as people do more and more burning, you can get pretty close to real time on a really hot machine.
But John wants something new. That's just video. It's old now. Where's the new compelling?
Yeah, it's just a faster disk.
maybe we need to develop a new sense. Something that kind of reads the gigahertz directly or something, and then these new machines can play right into it.
I do know I'm running the Skype program on this fast AMD machine I have here. I have a dual core.
It's a better job. Sounds good.
It sounds a lot better than when I ran it on my old Northwood, which was, you know, fast for its day, but, you know, just... So there's something about... There is some processing going on that is necessary.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, plus there's also the whole Vista performance tax.
Yeah. Well, anytime there's a new operating system, you're always paying some overhead. Some significant amount of overhead. But Vista is designed for dual-core machines, for all intents and purposes. You really don't want to run that on a single-core machine unless it's a rocket ship.
And a gigabyte of RAM. And,
I'm running it on a AMD 2500 with, 750 megabytes of RAM, and I got to say, it's not a thrilling experience.
Yeah. I bet
it runs.
Are you getting Aero and Glass, or do you not?
Like, Aero and Glass is no problem. Yeah. That's really Glass. You know, Glass is really all about having a fast video card with a whole bunch of memory.
Hey, we got to wrap this up. It's been, Bill. I'm so glad you could join us. It was really great to have you.
My pleasure.
Yeah, and we'll help you come back and join us again. Bill McCrone has founded the Ziff Davis Labs, founded the original Tech TV back in 94 or 93, and longest running column in history. Well,
not the longest technology
column. We'll say that. Right?
Mr. Laporte, Miss Landers is on the line.
She's dead. She can't hurt me now.
She's dead and still doing the column. That's
amazing.
That's talent.
You can catch Cranky Geets and, of course, DLTV online at dl.tv. And John's column is at dvorak.org/blog. And David
and
Prager.
PC Magazine and
MarketWatch. And MarketWatch. And we didn't get around to talking about your MarketWatch column this week, and I wanted to. We'll do it next week. It's a good column.
Yeah, it's a good column.
David Prager is with Revision 3, where they do Dignation and System and Control-Alt-Chicken. Revision3.com. Thank you all. Another twit.
This Week in Tech
is in the can. Okay. Happy 4th of July. Happy Independence Day.
This Week.
So do you want to do a twit today, Mr. Norton?
Managed to actually unbury my computer. I was like, oh, wow, it's three. I'll see if I can find
good.
It.
Good. Oh, I'm glad. We were actually, I was just about to call it off. So no more bad words in this episode 60 of This Week in Tech. Our tick. This Week in Tech. This Week in Tech. You know, we could do a whole new podcast about...
This Week in Tech.
I don't know, pests? But let's not.
It's our...
The Pestcast.
The Pestcast. Hey, so give me, what's Yoshi's Skype name? There are two Mr. Yoshis on the list, and they're both in Japan.
Yeah, Yoshi's a game character.
In fact, you know, his real name, in fact, when he came to Tech TV, he was called Josh and Joshua, but because we had Brentano, I said, we can't call you Josh. Give me another name. He said, well, when I was a kid, they called me Yoshi. So I said, okay, you're Yoshi now. So I take the blame for it.
Yeah, and he is Yoshi now.
Yes, that's it. And actually, it was a good move. I mean, that's much better than Josh.
Yeah, Josh is the biggest person.
Get him on.
Brentano gets pissed when you call him Josh. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, he wants to be Joshua. As if that's like somehow more dignified.
Joshua, that's Joshua.
Actually, I can understand that. Pat is my grandfather's name. Tech. You know, right. Patty's my mother's name, so I don't particularly like being called by either one of those.
Hey, this is Pat. Sometimes you don't want to
call you. That doesn't bother me that much. It's just,
we don't call Leo Leo.
That's my real name.
I try to, but it's very difficult in this game.
It doesn't roll off the tongue.
I worked with Leo so long, I've never wanted to do it because I never wanted to start calling him Leo on the air.
Do you prefer it?
It sounds dirty.
Leo?
I used to.
My twits, are you ready? Yeah, the twit army.
I don't know what the answer is. I really don't.
Let me introduce the table mates.
John C. Dvorak.
Kevin Rose, Patrick Norton, David Prager, Robert Heron. I got the Twit Army behind me. Microsoft poo-pooed it. They denied it, said no problem. Twit Army system. Paradise.
This is amazing.
In tech.